My name is Mihails Baštiks, and this is the Skedic podcast, where we focused on building strong Baltic brands. Today, we're sitting down with Marijus Andrijauskas from First Pick VC Investment Fund, where we discuss investing in early stage Baltic startups and why moving fast is super important. I wanted to start about your company first, about First Pick. Can you maybe quickly give a quick overview how it came to be and how you decided that this is the right time and format for you to work on?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having us here. And it's for us, it's very important to be in the entire Baltics, not only Lithuania. So we positioning ourselves, our entire thesis is, you know, that we are Pan-Baltic early stage fund. So overall, that there's not a big secret that entire our team historically was already managing one fund under the SVG name, that we're going to talk a lot about branding. So it was a strong red color known, you know, in the Baltics. But after, you know, investing the entire fund, there was a decision for us, you know, that what do we want to do next? You know, so we decided the entire team that we want to have our own fund. What we want a bit different, what do we want to do our community, with our investments, with our strategy. So yeah, we decided to do our fund, First Pick. By that time, we didn't know the name, you know, so there were like a very interesting creative process, how you're becoming a name, you know, putting very different names on a wall, on a white label, and trying to see what it means, you know, is it meaningful, is like completing, you know, the strategy, and is it different, and so on. And an interesting part that we involved our founders community into this as well.
Into the name creation.
And, you know, ask, what do you think? And how do you feel about it? And so on. So, and to be honest, the First Pick name come, one of the founders suggested it. The term actually came from MBA, those drafts, when there is this first pick, choice of first pick. And they said, you know, you should to stream for that, you know, and it's like, wow, that's cool. And entire, you know, partners and team members are also very deep into sports. We're doing sports, very different sports from, you know, running, you know, football, and then athletics, etc. So it's very relative to sports. So it's like, that's cool. That's very close to us, you know. So, and we trying, you know, to dive deeper what it first pick means. And we wanted that we are the first pick, you know, for our founders to be the first pick, you know, for the investor side. So we said, that's awesome. We want to build everything around that, you know, to be the first pick of, you know, future founders as well. Be this first investor in the, you know, cap table, in the, you know, the ones who believed in them. So yeah, we started to elaborate more on that. You know, that's where we took a bit help of the, you know, branding, professional branding, you know, on the picking the colors as well. It's not the easy choice.
Yeah, but you have a significant color presence. When you look at the First Pick brand, you can instantly see the purple as a brand color.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it's when you're going through this process, it's very interesting process, you know, and we mapped out entire ecosystem on the color palette.
All the players.
Yes, yes, all the players on the color palette, you know, and you're seeing what is what and who is like competing on this visual recognition, and then should we use the smaller caps, you know, and then based on that, you know, how do the merch could look like? It's a very important part, you know. So especially when you're thinking about switching from this strong red into, you're still thinking from the, you know, new player in the town, you know, competition, being different, being young, being a little bit of punk, you know. So yeah, and right after that, we enjoyed the result. We made a really good opening party with a lot of, you know, our colors in that, and then lights in the sky, and then
in the specific color.
Yeah, specific color. And there was a lot of media about this that also helped a lot, you know, to put all this color in the media. And yeah, that's how it started. It started a year ago on the 2022 November. We had this opening party. Now, after 1 year, we kind of recognized brand, I would say, in the Baltics. From what we're hearing from ecosystem, from the founders, from the other investors, from our partners. we proud of ourselves as well.
Mm.
We are most active investor in 2023. We already
in the Baltics.
Yeah, we already did 20 investments this year.
Mm.
So it's a huge number. And this actually is the part of this, you know, launch strategy, branding, positioning, and of course, it's not only about, you know, brand and name, but of course about, you know, the work what you do and
how you do it. You mentioned strategy, like how do you want to be differentiated from other players when it comes to investors in the Baltic region? Like, what's your strategy or positioning in that aspect?
Most primarial, I would say, word or, you know, bullet point in the strategy is the speed.
Mm.
So basically, we're saying we want to be fastest investor. By fastest, I mean on the, you know, when it comes screening, when it comes, you know, the scouting process, the screening, how we review, how we respond to those potential, you know, founders who approach us, how we're making decisions. We are having those, you know, investment committees on a weekly basis when typically, you know, those pre-seed or seed investors, you know, they're doing not like fast, but they have their own process. They're doing, you know, in a different way, like bi-weekly or monthly, you know, doing every week and making decisions and getting back to founders and responding and doing those intros, you know, due diligence, diving deeper. And when it comes to even a term sheet or investment agreement, we're also trying to be as fast as possible.
What allows you to be faster than, I think everybody wants to
preparation,
be fast.
Preparation. Okay. I think we were preparing for this fund almost 18 months.
Before
in
you
our
launched.
Heads, in our okay. heads, in our, you know, let's say material and then all the way how we wanted to build this you know fund, this company, this organization, let's say. So this one part, but another part, we are trying to be innovative, let's say, this way, you know, as well. We're using a lot of tools, automations, you know, the same AIs if we can use this, you know, for some sort of the process. Everything
to analyze
to analyze, you know, the deal flow, to analyze even portfolio when it comes, you know, how we call it, this, you know, manual monkey job, you know, but we can be automated and etc. We're trying to do this as most, you know, smooth, innovative, automated as possible in-house organization. And you know, when it comes outside organization about the speed, you can feel it. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read about the speed on your website, and speed is a lot of times emphasized when it comes to startup culture, and you should build your product fast. And I think everybody is trying to do that, but it's not that easy because you have a lot of things going on. And do you have some tips or suggestions for someone who's struggling to move faster? How you do that internally?
I completely agree here. That's it's not an easy, and even us, you know, we can say, yeah, we're doing everything smooth, but we're streaming to this, and I think the main formula is that we have super high standards for each other as a team, and there is like, you know, like very openly talking here, like I believe that when you see first pick as a team, as organization, outside it's like, you know, we're looking good, looking now shining, and we see that, and we're streaming for that. But in-house we have, you know, rules, we have, you know, actually high standards, and that's why we are doing what we're doing, and we are streaming for that. So it means that everything that could be better, you know, there is no strings that should be better, and everyone knows that. You cannot come just, you know, and be a vegetable or something like this. No, you should be very, very, you know, sharp and on everything, on every level, you know. So so that's why it gives us, you know, yeah.
But how do you balance between doing the best and like not falling into perfectionist trap when you need to move fast? Like sometimes you want to polish things and be perfect, but that takes time. And then how do you manage that?
There is no company ultimate goals. when they're aligning this, you know, first of all, why we're doing this, you know, mm-hmm. why we're doing this, and then, you know, how we do this, and, you know, when we do this, and then there's those more like detailed, like OKRs levels that we say, okay, this is our, you know, this year goals, and mm-hmm. we're dividing this in the month's goals, and we have weekly meetings with the entire team, you know, with 7 people in the team. It's not a big team, mm-hmm. but we going through this, what, you know, our current focus, is it leading, you know, to our those ultimate goals? And is it our efforts actually, you know, on the right time, in the right place? How much time do we spend on this, you know, like visibility, just showing cool, but how we actually spent on the actual work that brings value to the founders, to the portfolio, you know. And we are talking all the time, you know, and then when it comes to, you know, management, it's a very clear, you know, task, deliverables. If it's no one who's struggling, you should be very open that you're struggling, but those deliverables are super important, and we are pretty strong on this task management as well.
What is the main argument why speed matters, why it's important to move fast, both for you as a team and also for the companies you invest in?
Well, it's actually a really good question. I believe that, you know, we getting this very, very signal from our founders community that founders, once you start fundraising is super exhausting part for founders. It's a very, very, very exhausting part. It takes a lot of energy. It takes you out of the business. It takes out of you, you know, building beloved products, and so on. And we're seeing that. And most challenging part for that is that founders don't get proper response from those other funds when they're raising, especially if there are some no warm intros and they're doing some cold approach. So we didn't want to be such fund even for cold approaches. Mm-hmm. So that's why we decided that we want to be a quite, you know, friendly fund. At least saying no is also good to know that you're saying no, not
and
like
how you're saying
waiting.
That.
Yeah. We're saying that, you know, like not polishing around the circling, or so, mm-hmm. but we're saying no, it's not good for us. So, yeah, we're trying to do some bullet points, you know, because maybe, you know, it's too early, maybe it's too late, this blah, blah part that don't give value. But in the meantime, we say, well, we don't believe in, you know, mm-hmm. such a business. The market size is actually shrinking, not growing. The competition requires very intensive capital. We don't believe that a small ticket may change the rules of the games, you know. We are more than happy to join if there was a lead investor, because we believe this requires a bigger ticket, right? We don't believe that you are the right person of the background that you can do, but if you can bring some, you know, expertise on board, even advising level, maybe it could be enough. Mm-hmm. We're telling this to our founders. And founders appreciate that, because getting such info, it's way, way better than just silence or ignore or something like this. You know?
Well, considering that it's important to move fast, do you see there's also time when it's important to be, when it's important to slow down and take things steadily?
In the entire process of this game?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, the speed is good when it comes, we need to realize that now we're still, as a fund, have lots of competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Here
so
in the Baltics in or the in general?
In the Baltics, I would say, because, you know, even there are, you know, players like seed level investors who are now not even, you know, hiding this. They are going into pre-seed stages, mm-hmm. you know, and we know every player. We are very open with this. And it feels like we are all the collaborating, but we are so small ecosystem. In the meantime, we are collaborating, but we are competing. And everyone mm-hmm. knows that, you know. So, mm-hmm. And it's good. We have, you know, joint deals and so on. But getting to this question, so we do understand, you know, that we compete. And speed could be this differentiation when you can be faster than especially seed funds, mm-hmm. you know. Seed funds is taking a month when it comes to, you know, preparing the you know, legal due diligence and so on. We can, you know, invest in your company in 1 week. So this is a very big difference from making an agreement. Yeah. So, and this is a very big difference. And founders buying this idea that, you know, if we agree that invest you 100K, they can have literally money in their bank account, 100K in 1 week. Mm-hmm. And this is something, you know, that makes us, you know, on this fast-paced level. When it comes, you know, what we should do slower. So I think naturally it dictates that, you know, growing the business is a slower process.
Yeah.
Even we want, you know, the companies, you know, have a faster, you know, on the growth, on attraction, on the hiring, and then, you know, validating new markets. But building a startup, it's not walking in the park, you know. It requires time, and we need to know that it requires patience from our side, from startup side. So, yeah, and patiently, we are helping startups to grow those businesses.
When you do the investment and founders receive the money, what's the main thing you're looking for them to use that money, and what things to accomplish?
So as we are super early stage, we are starting not even like a pre-seed, but we are starting in acceleration phase, when basically there is a team, there is MVP, there is zero revenues. You know, in many cases, there is zero revenues. So our aim, our goal is so the founders validate things. Mm-hmm. We do not expect that they start growing, but, you know, we expect that they prepare for the pre-seed round. And in the pre-seed round, you should get some answers. Answers are like, who are your customer? Mm-hmm. Or who are at least few of groups of your potential customers, right? What potential markets are you planning to go? So for the next round, you would get those answers, how much capital you would need. What is the gap in the competence, right? What potential hires you would need? Mm-hmm. Do you know where are those hires? Can you headhunt them? Did you talk to them, right? What is the, you know, cost of those potential customers? If you're in the business-to-business model, there is one cost. If you're in this consumer app model, there is another cost. So these are the answers that we are together trying to get. Mm-hmm. So we can all together build the agenda for the next round, investor.
So you mentioned together, and you also say on your website that you invest not only money, but also your expertise and knowledge. How do you schedule your time, and how much do you get involved in each of those companies? You said you've invested in 20 companies in a year.
Yeah.
So that splits your time quite well. So how do you do that? How do you provide that value and also keep saying with all the companies you have to oversee?
Mm-hmm. It probably would be not possible to, you know, be involved in every company with a 7-people team. Mm-hmm. But what we have created in the last 5 years, I would say, the enormous involvement of our community network, enormous involvement. People are actually our ex-founders, our, you know, professional mentors, domain experts are so supportive in what we're doing, and they are so involved in this, and they believe in First Pick overall business model as a fund, as our accelerator. Mm-hmm. So we do have a 4-month accelerator program.
Okay, once you invest in the
after,
company.
Once we're investing, we can invest in the company directly without the program. We can do this. Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, a couple of investments we did that. But we deeply believe that, you know, when the startup coming in, we're investing not only cash, but this 4-month program. And they're coming in and they're getting from those, you know, very, very basics, you know, what is a startup, how to build, what are the typical issues between the founders, how to solve when you are in burnout, what if you don't get those answers, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
And you do that for individual each startup, or it's like a batch for all the...
That's the beauty of this, that there are this generic topics like workshops that fits to everyone. But when it comes to particular startup, we are connecting to particular person that can bring value to him. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, people in network who build and bootstrapped businesses. There are hundreds of million worth companies, and we can get attention as the mentors, and we connect in this 1 hour to one-on-one. The founders are getting of this, I just enlightened, you know, I know what to do now. I was like, you know, you know, punched in the face, and it definitely was wrong to do this, you know, and we should definitely connect to this and this. Mm-hmm. And moreover, when these founders, our founders, connect into our, you know, network, they're getting another, you know, connections that even we are not participating in. Okay. This. And that's how they're spreading their own network. And when those founders grow, they raise, they become successful, they're returning this as a, not like favor, but as a belief in us. And, you know, they're becoming even investors in our fund. Like in our fund, our LPs are, you know, ex-founders who already are successful. So That's how it works, circle, you know.
You're investing only in Baltic startups. And why did you decide to self-limit yourself to just Baltic states?
So, to be fair, I would say that we kind of get this limitation from our institutional LP because Lithuanian government is, you know, participating in this, and we are super appreciated that they are participating in this. In Vega is amazing, you know, how they're doing and supporting ecosystem. But the limitation is not only about this. We so much see potential in the Baltics that we deeply believe in the Baltic founders. And just for, you know, just giving you a number that despite the fact that we invested 20 startups this year, we reviewed 800.
Wow.
And that's an amazing number. That's an amazing number. There is so much potential, you know, and it's more and more opening. Like today, you know, I'm having 2 days to trip in Riga, in Latvia here. And even starting Latvia organizing meetings with the startup us. And we met yesterday 10 teams we never talked to in this year.
Okay.
And there was like amazing teams. So there is the right founders, good ambition, building amazing products. And there is so much, you know, potential founders here. So yeah, definitely want to work here.
Yeah, you're doing this Baltic startup report every half a year. But can you give a quick overview of why you're doing that and what's the aim of that? And then we can dive a bit deeper into that.
We are very into numbers. I'm personally very into numbers as well. So we kind of were scrapping a lot of data, first of all, for ourselves to understand where Baltics was, you know, 5 years ago, where it was 2 years ago, mm-hmm. how was those ups and downs, turbulences during, you know, pandemic, now during the war, you know, and then where is it getting back, or is it flat, or is it going down? For us, first of all, as a fund, to understand. Then we a bit disclosed the data to our investors, to our LPs. So mm-hmm. this is the data, and we say, wow, this is amazing. And we're starting to do even more analysis. In the meantime, we know that Change Ventures as well were doing this, you know, data report. And we as a two parties know how time consuming is actually to collect on the data, to scrap, to connect all the founders, to get, you know, details about the round sizes, involvement, who invested, what terms was that, what the valuation, because everyone is waiting for the data about valuations and how is it, you know, grow or drop. So it requires a lot of effort, especially, you know, fund overall as organization is very limited in resources. We cannot have like 10 people. We are not like a regular business that can hire 10 people tomorrow. So we should do with our limited resources, like mm-hmm. even Change Ventures should do with their limited resource. So we merged this year and made efforts together to build this Baltic report. And it actually was pretty good. It was really weighted for the community. It was amazing feedback. And we are, yeah, continuing to do this.
I read the report, and that was my first question. How do you even access that data? It's not that easy that you just log in somewhere and just scrap, just get it. You have to like individually contact a lot of players.
Yeah.
Or how does that look like? It must be very consuming.
It is consuming. It's actually... And you may know that one thing is like, you know, getting data from a media, and let me, you know, disclose the thing that when you're reading on a media that, company A just raised 1 million, it's always how it's going to be 1 million, you know, 1.2 million. But in the reality, there is a bit different numbers.
The terms are different.
Different terms, different round sizes, different participants. Round maybe closed even, you know, a year ago and only now announced. It should be kind of, you know, so we definitely have some data, you know, about, you know, 30% that we could never get the real. Yeah, we could never get the real data because it was disclosed and never on media and so on. But about 70% of the data we actually getting pretty detailed, pretty clear. We are, you know, approaching the VCs, our dear partners, you know, investors, funds, and as well founders. Yeah, so we are, hi, you know, congrats, you know, how about we share?
do people share? Are they willing to contribute, or you see that people are a bit...
They share. I would say when it comes about sharing information and sharing knowledge, the biggest change what happened overall in the Baltics, and I can relate it as a, you know, ex-founder, you know, being myself, like, you know, for 11 years as a founder as well, you know, I have different attempts building my own startups, you know, and raised capital from investors, and I can see a very big difference now that when the capital comes to the Baltics, and by capital I mean not only local VCs, but many international VCs come to the Baltics and started to invest, and startups stopped compete to each other regarding capital. Yeah. Not like vertical or business, but regarding capital, they starting to share knowledge to each other. So it's like I'm sharing with you, you know, my you know, experience, but I'm not afraid anymore that you, you know, can raise, and I'm not raised because there is only one fund could giving to the Baltics, you know, money. So that time started to change 5-6 years ago, and it's completely now different. Startups do not compete to each other regarding capital because there are so much capital, you know. Of course, it changed, you know, on a many levels now when it comes to, you know, the war perspective and then the economics perspective, et cetera, et cetera. But overall, this has changed. And they're sharing information. So it's not a big deal to disclose, you know, some details of the round and the terms and valuations as well. Mm-hmm. So
how do you see the landscape after doing this report, like in terms of Baltics, then Europe, then maybe a bit global context? What are your afterthoughts after doing this?
So mixed feelings. So from one side, we're seeing really good, you know, signs on the early stage, and the number of the pre-seed investments still promising. There is now a lot of startups who wants to try this entrepreneurship shoes, and founders who are coming from universities, and we're seeing a lot of buzz and movement from universities, hubs, venture studios. So early stage is booming, and it's a good for us as a first pick early stage investor and so on. When it comes seed plus stage, there is, you know, a bit more concerning situation.
And seed plus, can you quickly give a definition?
Yes, seed plus, it's typically when I'm talking late seed stage that we would having, you know, 20, 30 seed investments per year in the Baltics on a good time. Now it's dropped, you know, to below 10. And the same, like we on a good times, we had like 10 to 15 Series A investments in the Baltics. Mm-hmm. Now we have 2-3 investments.
And the difference between seed and Series A is just the amount of money that's invested?
It's maturity, it's amount of money. Yes, it's basically the maturity of the startup. It's an average taking, you know, in the Baltics, 3 to 5 years to go to Series A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but is that a Baltics phenomenon or just is it like a global thing?
It's a global thing. That's how we say that Baltics on that level, when it comes to a later stage, we are more seeing the same trends, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in US. It dropped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So from one side, from venture capital perspective, that's a good sign that as well, it's kind of back to earth when it comes to, you know, those valuations. There is no those utopic valuations that, you know, from the year, and everyone was like riding on those valuations. So now it's like based to the formulas, to the math, to those, you know, by the book calculations, how it should be. But in the meantime, VCs are not rushing to make decisions. They are watching the landscape, what's happening, but in as well looking for good opportunities. And those opportunities are kind of struggling because, you know, the if you're locking seed, it's naturally you're locking later rounds as well, right?
Okay.
So it's.
But does that change also how you look as an investor? Do you see that you want companies to be more profitable instead of growing fast?
So very good question. I think, you know, looking from venture capital perspective, especially in early stage, profitability is not a key metric. The most important metrics is how fast you can grow, meaning even if it requires to burn money. So that's why you're taking this money. But if you can find the growth formula, then you're trying to find how to scale this growth formula. And many startups are doing this mistake that they are, I need capital to scale before they finding what is the growth formula.
Okay.
So saying this in a very simple manner, so if you start scaling, the things are not working in your startup. So basically you have replica of the things that doesn't work.
Okay.
And you know, you're burning, and at the end of the day, you know, it's not
no
working.
Growth, no
not growth, no, yeah, yeah, it's game over. But if you find something, you know, that's actually working, you know, you're getting a good, you know, consumer profile, you're finding, you know, this acquisition cost, the unit economics is working, and it's natural, it requires capital for this marketing, sales, and it's more and more capital requires because there is so much noise on the market. So much, you know, startup marketings, you know, we are getting very tired of this, you know, buzz, what's happening on our daily life, on our, you know, social media, so on an ad perspective and so on. So it's naturally requires much more capital than, you know, 5 or 10 years ago to be visible, even in early stage. So it means that startups are burning money, you know, spending a lot of to become visible. And in early stage, you're not requiring to be profitable. But in later stage, it becomes important part because now when you cannot raise, so getting much more challenges to get a seed round, a Series A round, you know, the investor saying, guys, maybe you can, you know, a bit decrease your spend, this burn money, and not like necessarily becoming a profitable, but at least being break even means, you know, getting to this what you spend and your earnings come in. So based on this zero line until the times get better. So this requirement comes, especially in the later stage. Yeah.
And what's your view of like bootstrapping a company versus looking for investors even in the early stages?
Oh, I'm a big fan of bootstrap. So even, you know, being now on the investor side, I'm a big fan of those bootstrapper companies. And we have phenomenon in Lithuania that we have, you know, NordVPN, you know, bootstrapped company that's amazing, like team, amazing founders. And this is a really great example how you can build a, you know, a unicorn, and the guys, you know, got a unicorn status last year, and even this year they, you know, double up the valuation to 2.6 billion, you know, billion, like it's crazy, and it's bootstrapped company. So we have, you know, Omnisend is another, you know, bootstrap company. We have Board Panda, another bootstrap company. These guys are doing amazing job. So I'm a big fan of, you know, bootstrapped companies, but it requires extra skills to do that. It's not like you, and when I'm talking about bootstrap company, I'm talking about like even Kilohealth, right? It's amazing, like how did they bootstrapping and reinvesting capital and growing and so on, but it requires like extra skills. It's from one side, you know, getting this venture capital direction. You're taking, you know, the capital, and then you're experimenting, and you know the things may work, the things may not work. Everyone understands the risks. Bootstrapping, it's like a different species, you know, founders.
What and, skills do you think are necessary if somebody's considering bootstrapping?
Wow, it's like being super insightful, very big hustler, ability to attract, you know, people and execute fast. It kind of sounds same like in a going after this venture capital, but for me it's like I would like to put all those, you know, bootstrap founders on this chair and to ask millions of the questions for them as well, you know. But yeah, we're looking to those founders like, well, nice job.
Okay. So because in a way they are bypassing you as a fund if they're doing that in the early stages, right?
Yeah. We kind as well, you know, want to step in such companies and say, hey, but maybe you need some, you know, extra, you know, fuel. And then it's not like pushing that investment ticket, mm-hmm. but of course to be with such founders, that's a good way to be, you know. So these guys understand how to spend, you know, this 1 euro and to get, you know, 2-3 euros back. Mm-hmm. They understand, you know, the unit economics. Then they find the growth formula from day one. You can, you know, boost the scale up thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So. Because the bootstrap is, they found the growth formula. So all you need to is actually to help them to scale the things up. So, yeah, that's something, you know.
Maybe you can share some other insights from the report that stick to your mind. One of the things that stood out for me was, it's like maybe a small metric, but mentioned that convertible notes in pre-seed rounds jumped to 71% versus only 40%. Like, mm-hmm. can you comment on that? Why is that an important thing, and what does that signal?
Convertible debt. So basically, convertible instrument is the tool that actually can be executed very fast. Mm-hmm. So. It also matters a lot on this speed element, and we are
about speed.
Yeah, about everything about speed. When it comes, you know, to this equity rounds, and of course, it requires a bit longer process. It requires, you know, go to this legal aspect, registration, shares issuing, and so on. And, you know, convertible instrument that you can execute very fast. So mm-hmm. basically, you know, signing the agreement, you don't need to go all this, you know, share registration process mm-hmm. and so on. So that's why it very, very depends on the speed. And I could relate on that probably that.
Do you use convertible notes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then how do you use them, and what are the things to pay attention to when you're doing a deal with a convertible note?
Yeah. Overall, there is no like such huge difference when it comes to a regular, you know, investment agreement. On terms level, it's a very, very similar, you know. Even you need to be aware that to align those general terms, you know, on a term sheet and to put on the on convertible instrument agreement.
Well, like what are the basic terms on the convertible note?
No, the terms, how much capital you invest in exchange for what, you know, share in mm-hmm. the future share. And there is some sort of the agreements, pre-agreements. It can be, you know, what if, you know, and some sort of the discounts or agreed valuations caps that can be very various, you know, options how to do that. And then, you know, regular terms about, you know, founders involvement, about some rights in your organization. Mm-hmm. So basically the same, but the main like difference when it comes to speed, it's actually about this, you know, that you don't need to right after investment agreement to go and to issue those shares to do no change in the company, you know, mm-hmm. Cap table and etc. It could be as an agreement. So basically, if we made an agreement, we sign it, I can initiate literally a minute after that this investment process, so the money would arrive in your bank account. You don't need to go through this, you know, process.
And when you invest in a company, how much involvement do you want to have in the company?
Yeah, so we are not, you know, we are very transparent. We're not like hiding this or this. We are happy to have, you know, 7-8% in the company. Sometimes we are, you know, participating with a smaller amount, you know, 5%. Sometimes we are participating with a 10% when it comes, you know, to more like risky deals or bigger tickets. Mm-hmm. So we are trying definitely not to jeopardize, you know, companies' cap tables and to take too much. Mm-hmm. As well, we are trying to help founders to solve cap table challenges when they have from previous investors, if there are some co-founders, they are not participating or acting in the company. So we're doing this. But overall, yeah, being fair enough, in early stage, we are trying to have, you know, 7-8% in the company.
And how often do you meet the each of the companies you have? And like, how does their calendar look in collaborating with the investment?
How often we meet?
Yeah, I mean, if you have, let's say, 20 portfolio companies in 1 year, then you have 40 in next year. Like, how do you spread out your time and your involvement into each of those companies?
Yeah, but, you know, in the first 4 months, especially when they are in the program, so it's basically, you know, some sort of interaction on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Because they do have, you know, the marketing week, sales week. We have a sales coaches, in-house sales coaches who are doing those bi-weekly meetings, but in the meantime, bi-weekly meetings on the goals and the strategy and so on. But in the meantime, there is a lot of happening, you know, on the organization, on the hiring, on the preparing for the fundraising. Those 4 months is intense. Mm-hmm. And we are super, super involved in those companies. But after those 4 months, when the program is ending, it becomes more those unofficial board meetings, we call them, you know, and it's, we have those, you know, preparations, how to do with the reporting with the company, official meetings, teams coming in, and then we're having chit-chat. But every relationship with the founder is a WhatsApp level.
Okay.
It's a WhatsApp level, you know, messenger WhatsApp level. And everything that, hey, you know, we have a challenge, or, hey, you know, what do you think about this fund? Hey, what do you think about this person? Should we have fun? It's like WhatsApp level. Every partner in the company have, you know, owning their own portfolio company.
Okay.
And they are like WhatsApp level. The same as we are connected to entire ecosystem, community. Like, you know, if I need some opinion, like from Andres, like Change Ventures, mm-hmm. or something, it's not about reports we're building. Say, what do you think about this? And it's like, you should, you know, dive deeper here. And okay, thank you, Andres. You know, it's always about that.
And when it comes to branding and building a brand for your portfolio companies, what's your view on that, both in your stage as where you're investing and also when they grow bigger? And at what stage should companies put emphasis on that, when it's a distraction, when it's important and critical?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think in the early days, it's more like personal branding place than company branding,
because from the founder's
mm-hmm. perspective. I mean, yes. So, because in the early stage, like we're investing, we're not looking how strong is a brand or how cool is a brand. Ability to stream, to build a strong brand is very important, of course, because sooner or later it requires to have the strong brand. But for early stage, you invest in the founders, in the founding mm-hmm. team, in the core team, and this is more like personalities and the background, the experience, the network, you know, so that's what mm-hmm. you are making decision based on, not like young company brand. Later, when it comes, of course, you know, like seed stage and later stage, you're focusing on this brand. And brand is built a lot on this, you know, consumer, on the customer, on, you know, this not only front office, but back office, customer support, customer success, marketing, PR, and this visibility. It very varies. If you're in the B2C business, mm-hmm. it's one part. If you're in B2B business, it's a bit of other part, right? And then later stage, of course, it's streaming to become, you know, brand hard to kill, and yeah, mm-hmm. that's why you're spending a lot of money, you know, on the marketing and brand.
What aspects of branding you've seen in your career to be the most essential ones, like whether it's building a brand personality or working with the internal culture and the branding internally with the team when you need to scale and get good employees fast, or building the external image, like all of these things that can be put under this branding term. What have you seen stand out the most?
I can pick any brand.
Yes.
I am, you know, a very, very big fan of Pipedrive. Mm-hmm. I know Estonian startup, a unicorn, and I was looking from day one, and I know the founders well, and I was really, really like big fan of this company. In the meantime, I was building as well my own startup. It was competing, like. But I loved, you know, the idea that they were like transforming this software market, like CRM market, and how we communicate salespeople to salespeople. There was first approach and first attempts to making it super friendly software. And they actually succeeded to do this, you know, and in many ways. And as well, the company culture, how they build it. Later, there are so many startups took it as example, and I see it even today, you know. How you need to build a brand to be a consumer friendly, and what it means, you know, believe in the brand when you're hiring, people. So from today's perspective, I really like the way how some of our portfolio companies are doing. For example, Kevin, mm-hmm. they're doing a really strong brand in the, you know, payments sphere, in the fintech payments sphere. And it's a brand that becomes very recognized, you know, in Europe. And then I believe it's a matter of time becomes global, you know, brand. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's super important when it comes to attracting those talents in the later stage, you know, that, you know, to headhunt someone from a company who gives you, a good benefits, salaries, and mm-hmm. perks. How you can go to a startup, right? So it should be brand. It should be, you know, name that you trust, that, you know, you recognize, that you should be proud of every day walking to this, you know, startup where you're working and work in this company, you know.
Yeah, so to have a good reputation.
Of course.
Like you mentioned in your LinkedIn profile that you're an analytical and creative thinker at the same time. How do you see those two sides that sometimes are viewed even as opposite to work and benefit of you and the work you do?
I appreciate that someone is reading LinkedIn profiles. Thanks for that. But yes, creativity and numbers, it's my gift and my curse, you know. So I really like, you know, the numbers. I'm very into this. And in the meantime, I have a strong this creativity side when it's very easy for me mm-hmm. to come with some ideas and then brainstorm very quickly to jump into some workshops. Mm-hmm. So from that side, I feel very comfortable. Even in the first pick, you know, as our, you know, fund, as organization, to add creativity when it comes, you know, to standard process or standard, you know, cycles. How about this? How making it different? And the numbers approach is still, you know, when it comes, you know, data, I love it. And many people, mm-hmm. you know, love the data. And especially when it comes, you know, to investment side, many investors, you know, mostly accept data. So data is something that, you know, it's credible, that if you operate with the data and you know your data about the competition, about the landscape, about the market size, it's a data, it's a numbers. It's not like it's big, there is a lot of opportunity, when to go. No, how big it is, right? How big is the opportunity? So you should know the numbers. So yeah, this creativity and numbers, it's probably something how the Baltic Report has burned as well from our side. How we change things, you know, in the process of the company. So, yeah.
In the maybe the last chapter of this conversation, I wanted to maybe pick you on the interest of our own, and where our main focus is a branding design studio. But from time to time, we've been doing small investments in the form of sweat equity.
Oh, you do?
We have, yes.
Okay. And nice.
So I would. If you could maybe guide me through how you would look at this situation, how you would suggest to do it at what stage, in what format, and like what would be the elements you think are the most important in any particular stage to work on? So probably an early stage startup doesn't need a full branding package. It's maybe, even if they get it in form of sweat equity, it could be useless, and that will probably change in a year or so. So what are your thoughts? Have you maybe seen samples that are good case studies that could be replicated? And
while it's not 20%, it's good to go. You know, I'm saying this, you know, in a funny and in the meantime serious way, that investors, we're having this fun, you know, saying that the number two reason why investors are not investing in the company, most probably the cap table is broken, you know,
and by the beginning,
and by that is that maybe there are some, you know, ex-founders who are already not in the team. Maybe there are some early investors who have too much shares, but they are not already participating. So what it means? It means that mathematically, this is the game's all about the numbers and formula behind this. So that's why we have this early stage, pre-seed stage, seed stage. It's not just names. Every time the founders raise the money, it's typically they're losing from, okay, losing is a bad word. They're exchanging the money into 8 to up to 12, sometimes 15% per each round. Mm-hmm. What it means? It means that they dilute themselves this amount of the percentage, right? Every time. So imagining that they need, you know, 5, 6, 7 rounds to go to this end game. And the end game is acquisition or
IPO.
IPO, let's say, So liquidity events. So it means that they dilute themselves this particular amount.
Mm-hmm.
So if they start in the beginning already giving away those 20, 30% of the, you know, company for these early investors or venture partners or venture studios, so they already diluting themselves like from a day one.
Significant amount.
And they're losing control too early. They're losing control even after Series A. And investors doing these quick math and calculations, they know that the founders can lose control typically after Series B, when there is a professional, you know, C-level management, board advisors, ESOP established. It's very normal. But before you're going this, founders, it's a good thing that founders won't lose control, you know, on the company. So that's why this, you know, not jeopardizing the cap table from a day one, it's a very important part. Okay. It's a mathematically, you know. So
what would be the sweet spot, you would say, in terms of percentages?
No, it's a few. Let's say this
like
word.
A single digit or
single digit.
Yeah,
it's a single digit for sure.
And the format, like what I've talked to Ernest and some other people from the startup world, they suggested this convertible note. That would that be the format?
It could be. Like you know, from one side, it's still like instrument, but in general, you would probably need to do this math and calculation, and like, you know, if you as a company, as an agency, investing your effort, your hours, that could be built like, I don't know, let's say 50,000, right? Like 50,000. And then you can equally count and calculate how this 50,000 would be worth, you know, if it would be like direct investment or something like this. It should be the argument how it's actually become those, you know, 5 or 6 or 7% in exchange on a deal. It's not like, you know, I want 10 or I want 15, you know. It should be some, especially if there is like continuous you know, delivery, especially we have a contract and you continuously link on those pre-built towers that are not going to build for the startup. We're seeing those partners in the development as well, what's happening. So
it is easier when if there's an investor doing investment, then you just do it alongside and they have a valuation that you can put yourself against, and that's that it's easier then. But like, at what stage do you think that would be the most beneficial for investors, for the startup itself?
In what stage?
Doing this like a deal with sweat equity and branding and
It's a typically it's an early stage game, let's say, you know, playing with those sweet equities. But to see, we see this, you know, still in a pre-seed. Some companies are very, you know, strong founding team, and they're missing some sort of a skill, and they outsource it, and they're getting into those, you know, deals. So we're seeing this in early stage. It's happening, and it's happening more and more often. We're seeing this venture studios appearing in, as well.
Venture studios meaning?
Venture studios meaning that they have this professional service like expertise level or development or, you know, even like professional design or strategy or brand.
And they're not investing cash, but with their services.
Yes. So it's appearing as a business model. It's happening. And but once again, we're seeing this happening, that sometimes those venture studios entering into startups and like taking 20%. So the young founders, they don't realize, they see it as a fair deal. And maybe it is a fair deal by that time. But when it comes to real venture capital, you know,
it's a problem.
That's kind of a challenge. But, you know, if I come to you and say, look, you guys have 20% now in the company, how about we invest, we determine the real valuation, and even your 10%
becomes more valuable.
Would you agree with this? And most probably you'd say, let's do it, because otherwise, if it's not investable company, it's not
like
good
that
for you as well, right? Yeah. So it's always about the conversation. It happens even in a later stage, you know. We're seeing those examples, you know, from my previous experience as well. I can say that even later stage investors who are coming in and say, no, no, these guys have too much, you know, shares of equity. There should be some arrangement. The founders should take more, you know. So it's happening, those conversations, when it comes to making a deal.
All right. Good to...
So how about you? How you see this landscape overall? How it's changing from your perspective? Is the startup becoming more mature when it comes about branding, understanding the importance of it?
I think an interesting aspect that we've seen, that there's more and more performance marketing driven companies. And some of them are bootstrapped, some of them are not, but they're very aggressive on performance marketing and buying their clients. And it's always a balance when you do performance marketing. It's usually like with a hammer on the head. It's like very aggressive, very loud, and it devalues the overall brand image. And in the early stages, it's very good that you get the cash flow in, and you need that to survive. And then at some point, you reach a stage where you need to attract talent. And then that becomes an issue when you want to get some more A-level players, and all your brand images, like performance ads that are, they get the results, but the brand image is not super nice.
Yeah.
And then how do you balance that? And how do you find, like, the sales team is doing a very good job, but then sometimes like the overall image is questionable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've seen some of those, and I don't know. Have you seen that being the case?
Absolutely. And how do you approach more like startups, or startups realize and getting more mature understanding, they're coming to you for help? How is that?
This year it's been the second one, but we're thinking of doing how to organize our outbound communication as well in next year. But that's been a challenge when it comes to, not the challenge, but like the observation, when it's startups and tech companies that are very numbers driven, as they are, and that's where they're successful. But then how do you build a strong brand once you're above the survival level? And
how you typically, you know, when the startup is coming in, I'm curious, in early stage, they do have this small tickets, you know, like, you know, if it's a angel investment, they have like 50K, 80K. If it's an acceleration, they have 100K plus angel, 150. It's still, you know, having some salaries, of course, you know, then building the product, and then, you know, some sort of, you know, goes to a marketing. And some of them don't have a ticket, you know. And how do you see this as a super risky business model to do like in a sweet equity or an exchange in some pre-built hours?
Yeah,
or something?
That's why historically we have not been working with a lot of early stage startups because of that reason. They don't have a lot of cash to spend on branding, and we like to do it very thoroughly and do all like look at every aspect, and that's not like fast for us is weeks and fast for them is days. So it's like even the time frame is different. So we usually work with companies in a bit later stage, like when they're not drowning and they know they can survive and they have some cash to allocate to proper branding. And this idea about sweat equity started just because of that reason, that we see at early stages they don't have cash, and but they have a need. And of course, not all businesses, but those who are more B2C oriented, that for them it's more important to have an image that they're a creditable company and they can be trusted. And that's why we started experimenting with that when we had founders approach that they needed the brand and the visual identity, but they didn't have any cash they could spend on that because they had only a bit for the salaries and the team, and that's basically
exactly that's okay. I believe that I would probably go as well, go for it, you know, some part of, you know, customers would have this early stage, you know. Of course, it's a super risky, you know, you need to wait very long until, you know, so it's kind of, you know, this sort of the game requires time, but yeah, if it works, it works, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Especially in B2C.
I think, one thing that's, it's maybe a, regard to the Baltic startups report you're doing, and even in the first segment you said that the Baltic states punch way above their weight with how much startups we generate, and we're almost on the same level as the startup land of Israel. That's usually that also Andris mentioned when he was here, that we have the potential to be a story similar to that. Can you relate to that? And you see that the trend is going upwards?
I think it's very correlates to this early stage that we mentioned, that it's a very positive signs on this early stage. There is a lot of movement, a lot of new founders coming in, starting to build this. When it comes, you know, to this correlation or trying to, you know, see how we look in the European perspective, I like this, that we see, you know, Israel as example for the ecosystem, you know, knowing the fact that everything has started also, you know, from, you know, this godfather of Israel startup ecosystem, and you know, grow into enormous number of the unicorns that the ecosystem, and what's the population up to 10 million, right? And this enormous, you know, success in one small, you know, nation. And we're seeing this as well, you know, in the Baltics. If we see how much, you know, investment per capita, how many startups, and as well, you know, like 12 unicorns, 13 unicorns already, you know, in the Baltics. And sunicorns, you know, coming in companies. So it's happening, and it's now it's, you know, all the situation globally, it's not stable. Of course, we're in the region that these international investors, not international, even Nordic investors, are going to the Baltics, like, So it's happening. But I'm positive on that, that the things will get better, you know. And then,
what should we pay attention for that to happen? Like, what are the metrics or the I don't know, the players in the ecosystem that need to be paid attention to in order for the trend to move upwards?
You know, for the startups, for later stage startups, everyone, I believe that everyone is aware now that, you know, getting this later stage investment, there is a lot of hustle, you know, so it's not like easy money now, but it's still, you know, investable. It's still happening, but the numbers shrinked a lot. While in early stage, we have this positive note. There are many deals are happening, you know, 100 plus deals happening, you know, H1, and then most, you know, on the this pre-seed stage, mm-hmm. early stage. So yeah, a lot of movement here.
If you could have a message out to all the startups in the Baltic region from your point of view as an investor, like what would be the ending note you would leave us?
So the ending note would be this, that we should be very proud, first of all, what's happening in the Baltics. The ecosystem is glowing, and I would say this world is the best. The Estonia was glowing for a while, and then it's maybe, you know, this year it's a bit, you know, stopped, and it's a very good time for Lithuania and Latvia
to step up.
And we should be super proud. Like as a Baltics, we should be super proud as a startup, as a universities, as a founders, as entrepreneurs, as investors. We are very united, we're very helpful, and I believe that's our formula of success. Mm. And I hope and I wish and I want that it stick to this pace and everything is going to be good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's it for today, and thank you for listening. If you find these topics interesting and valuable, feel free to subscribe to Asketic Podcast at YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can also write us at hello@asketic.com, and let's build impactful brands together.